I'm doing good, too.
Of course,
in truth, we're always doing good, but, you know, we have these relative metrics that we apply in the dream, huh?
Well, we do, and I just got off a call where we were talking about what is the real world and what is today's lesson, and it's all about, everything is going okay right now unless you decide it doesn't.
That's right.
I love it. It's hilarious. Good morning to everybody who's here on the call with us this morning. It's Bruce Rawls and Lynn Johnson, and we are going through Ken Wapnick's book, The Journey Home. And it is a discussion of the obstacles to peace from A Course in Miracles. And, boy, I've been getting a lot of understanding of, you know, how and why.
Me too. Every page in his books are packed, and this is actually my second time going through it, and going through it slowly with you just kind of makes it even more, you know, profoundly, you know, the importance of it is more profoundly evident each time we read another few pages. And should we start right in? Do you have any announcements first?
No, I don't have any announcements. I guess Doug Sparks did a really good program down in Mexico.
Yeah, I talked with Doug and his wife Nisa the other day, and they said they had a great time, and they're doing another one in January. So if anybody missed that one, I think I do have the dates. But let me look those up while we're talking, and I'll give those a little later in our conversation this morning. But yeah, I think it's toward the end of January, also in Ajijic, Mexico, near Lake Chapala, and he's giving another workshop there. So apparently that's was well received, and he's doing it again.
Very
and
good.
You can always go to his website, DougSparksACIN.com, for more information too. As soon as we have the details, we'll be putting that there.
Very cool. And Jimmy Twyman, James Twyman, and Bill Free are walking across America in with no money. You know, James Twyman just became a Franciscan friar, priest, I'm not sure, monk.
Okay.
And so he and Bill Free are walking across America with no money to make a statement about peace, I guess.
Well, that's cool. So now if he's using a cell phone for communication that has chips in it, he could be a chipmunk walking across the country, right?
You could be a chipmunk. Oh, that's hilarious. I love the way your mind works.
It's pretty bad, isn't it?
Yeah, it is pretty bad. But
I have fun with it. So.
Yeah. So, do you want to start reading?
Sure. Yeah. I'll go into our announcement. I always like to let people know about the two main websites that I think are just gems, in addition to the other ones we mentioned, like Susan Dugan's and Tim Weiselin Corona's and several others. Obviously, the one that we're working on this program, which is underway, but the two main sites about A Course in Miracles are FIP, which is the Foundation for Inner Peace, is ACIM.org, and FACIM.org is the companion sister site. Those two sites have just a wealth of, you know, depth and breadth of information, both, you know, content and history and context and so much more. And the newly updated FIP site has an events section and videos that are let's discuss ACIM are being added there on a pretty much monthly basis now. There's another one that's about to be added soon. And then I know Dr. Bob Rosenthal is giving another couple of talks between now and the end of the year, and so those will be added as well. So there's already half dozen great video conversations there that you can watch anytime. And then, of course, the Foundation for A Course in Miracles has just an enormous depth and breadth of content from Dr. Ken Wapnick, who we are reading from. And that's at facim.org, and the other is acim.org. So they're pretty easy to remember if you want to just, you know, kind of commit those to memory. And, you know, so those, between those two websites, so you can, you know, any course student, new or old, can find a wealth and, you know, depth and breadth of information that, that can take you along your journey and complement the course itself. So highly recommend it.
Very good. Yes. And just go to acimblog.com and you'll find all those things, as Bruce is really good about keeping up a website with all kinds of good stuff. And Bruce is also helping us to put together our ACIM Gather website and make it more functional, which is going to be very, very helpful for us. So that also being said, is that the Yahoo groups, if you are a member of a Yahoo
group,
those Yahoo groups are basically going away, as I understand it, and only going to be email back and forth. Which we have over 5,000 people in our ACI, in our Disappearance of the Universe Yahoo.
Yeah, yeah. And I've been enjoying that for many, many years. Yeah, that's a great resource.
So yeah, we're going to lose all the past. Everything that was posted on there is going to be gone. 16 years. It's been almost 16 years.
Wow. Now, is that going to be downloaded and archived somewhere? Because I noticed there was an option for doing that some sort when I read the announcement.
Yeah, there is an option for that, and I don't know where, because there's thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of messages on there.
That would be helpful to have, you know, in some form online that could be, you know, indexed and searched and that sort of thing. Cause I know there's tons of great content there from over the years that people have submitted.
Oh my gosh, yes, you know, and yeah. So many great teachers, you know. So I'm looking at what I can do as far as downloading,
okay.
And you know, we'll figure it out, and then
yeah.
We'll, you know, maybe have to go to a forum or a Facebook group, which we do have a Facebook group for Disappearance of the Universe.
Right.
So, you know, we might use that and just see, you know, how that works.
Well, maybe it could be a subdomain for ACIM Gather too, or something like that. You could, a lot of possibilities. But anyway, let's see if we can brainstorm that, and if anybody else listening has some ideas of how to help with that, because there's just so much great content that you have been particularly helpful with facilitating, and many others, of course, over, as you point out, you know, better part of two decades worth of great content that'd be nice to have access to for people that really, you know, appreciate the course and all of its contributions and all the contributions of people that have contributed to the DU Yahoo group. So, yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, well, we'll see. That's what I said. That's up to the Holy Spirit, you know. It's not really up to me. But you know, we'll figure it out, because it will come about.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, but a lot of people, a lot of things are changing at the end of this year. So, it's just portent of things to come, I guess. I don't know. So nothing can stop the shape of things to come. Anyway.
That sounds quotable.
It does. All right. So
how about if I dive in and read where we left off? I have us in the middle of page 98 in Ken's wonderful book, The Journey Home, The Obstacles to Peace in A Course in Miracles.
Okay.
And we're well into chapter 4 now. So he starts with a quote from chapter 19. The body does appear to be the symbol of sin, while you believe that it can get you what you want. There's a big hint right there. We believe that it can get us what we want. While you believe that it can give you pleasure, you also believe that it can bring you pain. Now, that's probably devote, you know, worthy of many chapters right there, but I think he's going to compress it into one or two. Right? So, anyway, Ken now proceeds to expound on that loaded quote. And he says, and in case you skim these lines and miss their import, they are repeated almost word for word later under the second obstacle. The body seems, in Italian, to be the symbol of sin because sin is separation. And I'm going to pause for a moment to share my favorite wordplay with the word sin, is that specialness, substitution, and separation all have the letters S-I-N in them, and they're all pretty good placeholder ideas or kind of, you know, familial ideas to the course's idea of sin, which is, you know, basically a belief that something happened that destroyed the perfect oneness that is our real state, our real identity, our real mind, our real being. And we have so far dissociated from that we actually believe it happened. We actually think we pulled it off. And we've made up a world so convincing that it at every turn seems to reinforce the idea that it happened. But the Course says, no, it never happened. You're off the hook. You're free to go. No foul, you know, no error. You know, and really, error is actually probably the best word, operative word, because it's just a silly mistake in our choice of thinking, and we made up a whole thought system and even a whole universe to hide out from the imagined repercussions and blowback from this horrendous, unimaginably awful decision that couldn't have possibly been made except in a dream. But we believed in it, and so that's why we go to all these lengths to learn how to undo or really unlearn what we thought we did. And, you know, that's what we're reading about and working on, and that's why, of course, miracles is such a wonderful mechanism and tool for getting us back to our right mind so that we can, you know, look at the belief in sin and separation and specialness and the substitution we thought we made and just say, no, it didn't happen. And then from there, a happy outcome to all things that aren't really things is sure, right?
Perfect. So go ahead and read.
Okay, so I'll finish that paragraph. Let me start that sentence over again. The body seems to be the symbol of sin because sin is separation, and the body is the embodiment of that thought. And then he references workbook lesson number 72, paragraph 2. It is the body that was made to keep us separate from each other, because bodies begin and have an end, and this beginning and ending are separate from everyone else's. Oh, well, there's the big deal right there. It's separate from everyone else's. The little garden in chapter 18 provides us with a clear description of the ego's purpose for the body. And here's quoting from text chapter 18, section 8, in paragraph 5. Such is the strange position in which those in a world inhabited by bodies seem to be. Each body seems to house a separate mind, a disconnected thought, living alone and in no way joined to the thought, capital T thought, by which it was created. Each tiny fragment seems to be self-contained, needing another for some things, but by no means totally dependent on its one creator, capital C, for everything, needing the whole to give it any meaning. For by itself does it mean nothing, nor has it any life apart and by itself. I think we get twinges of that sometimes when, you know, as egos, we intrinsically feel, you know, fearful and alone and uncertain, as the Course says, you know, and, you know, it's just like, you know, it's a lonely existence thinking that we're apart from the rest of everything. But that's the implied, you know, that's the interpretation that we misinterpret the feedback of the world when we, you know, take the ego's interpretation seriously. And we think that, you know, something happened, and that because something happened, we need to somehow manipulate the world and adjust the circumstances in the world to make it work for us as individuals, as separate selves. And it's this constant, you know, pointless, ultimately, and you know, futile, challenging struggle that we're all battling. We're all trying to, you know, tamper with with space-time and make it work to our benefit, and the implication is that at the expense of someone else's somehow, and then we have enormous guilt about that. We think that somehow for us to be happy, it has to happen at someone else's expense, and whether it's microbes that we're destroying with each breath, or a carrot, or a cow from the Amazon, it's all a cannibalistic crazy dream that we think we need in order to sustain the seemingly separate selves we think we are.
Exactly. It's making me think about that. I used to be a Buddhist and still am a Buddhist in, most all ways because, mm-hmm. It's the same thing, really. But the knowing of interdependence that, the Buddhists see the life in this world as everything is interdependent, there is no man an island. There's no one who can stand alone. There is nothing that can be without all of everything else that appears to be here, because it's a fabric. It's a fabric and a network of being that you can't just pluck one part of it out and have the rest be whole, and you can't pluck one part of it out and have that be whole. It just doesn't work. So in the dream and the illusion, we are all interdependent. And in reality, we are interdependent. That is something that can't be changed. So, God is depending on us. We depend on God. We depend on each other. We depend on the sonship is completely interdependent. Although it is not, no part can be taken out of it, and still be whole. So I think that this whole idea of me being in my own separate place, achieving enlightenment, on the top of the mountain, or whatever it is that I think I can do, is just foolishness, because I can't be enlightened unless you are too.
I can't. And the mountain.
And the mountain. Yeah, first there is no mountain, then there is a mountain. None of it can be without the other. So that's why, rejecting any part, even if it's rejecting a part of what, we consider to be the illusion, is still rejection. It's not acceptance. And, Jesus encourages us to just accept. Everything, what could you not accept if you but knew that all things, past, present, and to come, are gently planned by one whose only purpose is your good? You may not understand that plan, but, accept that that's what's really happening here. And, exactly. We think about that and, think, well, the world isn't real. Why would God make a plan for the world? That's not what it means. It means that everything that we thought we made, the entire illusion, is really the Holy Spirit in charge of everything, and this is why it's not real. It can't be. It doesn't need to be fixed. Doesn't need to be changed. We just have to recognize the truth of what it is, and in that recognition, we see the real world. We find the peace, and but we can't do it alone. You cannot do it without practicing forgiveness.
Exactly. I was just going to say, you read my next thought is this, that, we don't see the big picture, but we do have this infallible tool that's been given to us by Holy Spirit called forgiveness, and the forgiveness that it recommends, not like Gary Renard's teachers would say, it's not like not your parents' forgiveness. It's the Holy Spirit's forgiveness, which basically says nothing happened to disturb perfect oneness. And so that from that perspective, God never was thrown under the bus. We never committed this cosmic crime, and from that perspective, can we afford to let everyone and everything off the hook, including the selves that we think we are. And that dissolves those boundaries, and then that, so the forgiveness combined with the Holy Spirit's perspective, which I think is inextricably interconnected and interdependent and interrelated with everything and everyone, and that awareness that we're all connected and dependent and part of one thing, dreaming that there's was even a possibility of separate things, that awareness is what leads us out of the dream gently, and that's why, it says forgiveness is an illusion too, but it's the one illusion that undoes all the others and awakens us to the truth. And so we don't have to go directly to the truth. We have the opportunity through forgiveness to go step by step at our own comfortable pace that isn't fearful, that leads us gently and patiently out of our own self-made nightmare into a happy dream, and from there it's easier to awaken. So that's the beauty of this curriculum, I think, is that we don't have to force anyone or anything from happening or to happen, because the outcome is sure, and the end result is we're all going to see that we've never slept. And so the corollary to that is, if we're all already home, the only part of the dream that I need to be responsible for is my own mind, and give that mind over to my inner kindness teacher's guidance to teach me how to keep forgiving and extending and generalizing that practice of forgiveness to everything until it becomes second nature, and then at some point I just drop my investment in a separate identity altogether, and that I think is facilitated by developing, or really unraveling and revealing, the shared identity and the shared interest that we have with everyone over time, and seeing that our real identity is this fabric, kind of like some of those, you may have seen some TV ads where they show little points of light on the globe, and then we see these little lines that connect all of them, and pretty soon there's dozens and hundreds and thousands, and then the whole thing just lights up. Well, that's really how it is in truth. It's really just one illumination, but we have seemingly fragmented apart. So the process of undoing it is really making those connections, connecting the dots, recognizing that the reality is not in the dots, but in the connection. And the connection is really one fabric. It's one web, just kind of like some of these mushrooms are actually one organism that appear to show up as separate things. But if you follow the root system and the mycelia fibers, they're actually they cover acres or even entire states.
Yeah. One thing.
But it's that interconnectedness, I think, that reminds us that all we have to do is just choose the right teacher, and we see how everything is really part of one curriculum, one simple curriculum of forgiveness that guides us home. And that's pretty nifty.
It is pretty nifty, yeah. And it can be achieved by anyone, all of us. And if I just do that, if that's all I do is simply do this, put aside everything I ever thought was real, and and connected through those total connections that we all have, I would begin to see there was no difference between us, and I wouldn't mourn the loss of one or the other, because you can pick those mushrooms all day and they'll grow back more,
because the root is eternal. And I think that's the metaphor that we're
we're
learning, isn't it?
Yeah. Aspen trees too tend to be like
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
That they are, entire populations that are one extensive being moving outward from a central tree. So yeah, that's why you find aspens in circles, and that's why you see a lot of times you'll see like the aspens lighting up, making up the letter C on the mountains when the colors turn to orange, and think, oh, it's a big C for Colorado, but really it's just a circle of aspens that some part of it is no longer part of the circle. Anyway.
Interesting, yeah. Cool biological facts from Lynn.
Yeah, there you go.
And of course, the metaphysical, idea that embraces all that is that all the things that we observe, you know, whether it's aspens, mushrooms, quarks to quasars, anything in between, is really all part of this one, mental organism. And the forms are ultimately irrelevant, but we need the forms to kind of get back to our mind, our right mind. And so those metaphors of mushrooms and aspen and interconnectedness, I think, can be helpful because they lead to the undoing of the belief in separation.
Right? Exactly. And also, you think about nowadays, all these people are having their getting their family, spit into a tube and, they send you a thing saying who all you're related to all over the world and where your family came from. And, people are finding out a lot of astonishing things that they didn't know about themselves and their family. But what I see is how much interconnectedness and how much interrelatedness, I even have branches of the family, many generations back who, from my mother's side and my father's side, were connected. And it's like, oh my gosh, these people are claps, and these people are claps, and these are in my great-great-great-great-great-grandmothers. This is in my, it's an amazing thing to see how related we all are.
So has that led you to the sound of one hand clapping?
That's right.
So your dream of genealogy is leading you to an inner applause.
An inner applause, that's right.
All right.
Or applesauce, whichever way you want to do it. All right, so I'm going to read.
Good. We
divert. Oh, okay. So once we believe the body can get us what we want, this is Ken talking, by the way. Once we believe the body can get us what we want, whether we are talking about getting us what we want by murdering someone else, or getting what we want by being a source of pleasure, we are obviously making it real. If we make the body real, then we are saying that sin and separation are real as well, because the body is simply the shadow of the thought of sin within the mind. And this must ultimately mean that God is not real, since body and spirit are mutually exclusive. So this is a huge idea that the body is simply the shadow of the thought of sin within the mind.
Yeah. Can I pause right there and just share something? Because I think this actually, and Ken will undoubtedly go over this six ways from Sunday, but one of the ideas that I think is really vital is that it's not the body that's the problem. It's taking it seriously because it's our mind's decision to make the body a big deal and to make a separate identity real and taking it seriously. That's the problem. It's not the form. It's never the illusion that's the problem. It's the mind's decision to take the illusion seriously and make it real, make the separation real in our minds that is really the only remaining decision we need to undo, and it hasn't been anything worthy of condemnation on our part or anyone else's part. It's just a faulty, flawed decision. It's an error, not a sin. It's just in truth, an innocent mistake. But because we've taken it so seriously, we think there's grave consequences, and we think that when bodies get sick and die and things like that, not that we necessarily behave that much differently in the world, but if we can just remember that, our spirit is what is eternal, then if that is really what is immune and exempt from any kind of unhappy outcome, then a happy outcome to all things is insured, because all things aren't things.
Exactly.
Everything really is spirit. Everything is that one thing, and that is infallible and unchangeable. And but spirit is this sort of more abstract thing that we just need to allow ourselves gently, by the practice of forgiveness, undo the belief in separation by recognizing the shared interest and listening to Holy Spirit's guidance on that at every turn. Becomes easier and easier to identify with the all of us rather than the part of us, and that all of us identity really is more real, more vibrant, more potent, wonderful than we could possibly imagine. But we've, you know, and we're toward the bottom of the ladder, as Ken puts out. You know, we're kids, we're little toddlers, and we need guidance to get back to that awareness and to acknowledge that, you know, we're just starting out here, and so we need to be really, really patient and gentle with ourselves and everyone else as we go through this curriculum of forgiveness.
Absolutely, and that is absolutely possible because we have this wonderful gift of forgiveness. And, mm-hmm. and it's just the practicing of it. You know, once you figure out that it's something that you have to do, it's something you have to do every day, you have to do it all the time, you know, you can't make excuses for not doing it, you don't have, there is no excuse for not doing it. And it's easy, although it doesn't seem like it's easy because it goes against the very nature of the body and the ego. It basically says the opposite of what Jesus says, and so what the ego says. So if Jesus is telling us that we can do something or should do something that seems counterintuitive, which is really what we're talking about here, is that, you know, we're going against our intuition. We're going against the ego telling us, you know, no, you can't trust this person. No, you can't love this thing. No, death is bad. You know, cancer is bad. You know, you can't look at that and see that there's no sin in it. Nothing has gone wrong. You know, obviously something has gone wrong. This is how the ego talks to us all the time. And so it's counterintuitive to say, I'm not a body, I'm free. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter how often you may say it, to really believe it, you know, say these words is one thing, but to believe them is everything. And, you know, to know that that's the truth is, you know, again, it's counterintuitive to whatever the ego says. And so we fight it, we struggle against it, and we deny it. But it's only in accepting it that we are shown. And it's not because we're not, you know, Jesus is holding it back and saying, I'm not going to show you this is true until you accept it. You won't accept that it's true until you accept it. Once you accept right. that it's true, you will see it always has been. Nothing changes. You just see what's always been the truth. And seeing what's always been the truth, you know, you just like, duh, I could have had a V8. You know, that kind of thing.
I could have seen peace instead of this.
I could have seen peace instead of this. Exactly.
And we still can't. That's the present moment is always the only thing we have, you know, any access to and in charge of. And fortunately, that's the one thing that gives us the opportunity to be peaceful at every moment. We really, truly can be peaceful at every moment. And it's an effortless effort. It really doesn't take any effort because Holy Spirit does all the work. We just have to choose against a separate interest. And then immediately what's left over is, you know, the awareness that we need to do nothing. You know, we already are taken care of. And everything in the world then has a happy outcome because there's nothing in the world to get hung about, as the Beatles would say.
Exactly. Exactly. So let's see. Where are we at? Let us
continue. I think we have therefore believing the body to be the source of pleasure.
All righty. Okay. Let's see. Oh, did we read, you see the flesh, recognize the spirit? Did you read that?
Oh, no, maybe we didn't read that.
Okay.
Yes, you're right. You're right. Okay. Thank you. Back up a paragraph.
All right. So, I think I started this and we never got through. Okay. Oh. So once we believe the body can get us what we want by murdering, because I remember reading this, or getting what we want by being a source of pleasure, we are obviously making it real. If we make the body real, then we're saying that sin and separation are real as well, because the body is simply the shadow of the thought of sin within the mind. And this must ultimately mean that God is not real. since body and spirit are mutually exclusive. That's huge. And then he quotes from chapter 31. You see the flesh or recognize the spirit. There is no compromise between the two. If one is real, the other must be false. For what is real denies its opposite. And so that's it. You know, ultimately, you know, you either have to say God is real or God is not real. And you know, if you recognize that God is real, then you can see that there is no compromise with unreality. But again, that's counterintuitive to what the ego teaches us. So, so either, but it comes right down to it. Either you believe God is real or not. And, you know, that's a huge, challenge, because people say, oh, I believe in God. But, you know, what is it that you really are believing in? And
a lie.
Yeah.
And I think that I find that helpful when I'm watching the news, and there's certainly an abundance in the last few years of political, you know, shenanigans on TV, and you know, on one level it's, you know, appalling, and on the other level, if I can remember, it's like, oh, well, this is just a representation of how everyone here is a liar. We all are claiming to be separate from perfect oneness, and once that premise is accepted, you know, ultimately all hell breaks loose, because that is insane, and only insanity can result from insanity. And, you know, it's the hermetic law of gender generation, and everything, nothing can produce unlike itself. And so, you know, we have to recognize that in this world, the unhappy outcome of the ego's thought system is certain. And I think that's it doesn't mean that, you know, and I keep coming back to this thing from Ken Wapnick's commentary on Lesson 182. You know, the purpose of the Course is not to make us miserable. It's to point out how miserable we've made ourselves by listening to the ego's insanity, and by you know, listening to the lies that we believed were necessary to defend in order to have some kind of happiness in the world. Well, we don't, if we're honest, we don't really have happiness in the world. We have happiness in our mind, and only in a mind that has chosen against identification with the world as a, you know, a meaningless collection of separate things that are at each other's throats and, you know, in this constant state of warfare from quarks to quasars, you know, everything's battling everything else on some insane level of ego thinking, right?
Yeah, and that, I mean, it's no clearer than when you even look at your own body, the human body, and
sure.
It's at war with itself constantly.
Yeah.
There's, you know, and all it's doing is attempting to destroy. You know, there. I mean, you look at all the different cells that are going on in your body, and they're all trying to live, and they're all fighting each other for sustenance. And you know, then you get an infection. That's another kind of a battle that's going on. And we constantly have this. I mean, there is a constant war inside the body between the creatures that live here that depend on each other, either their life or their death, to survive. It's, you know, you could just watch any video about biology. You look at, you know, how the bloodstream works or how the organs work or anything, and you see it's war, 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 the whole thing. Even though, you know, we wouldn't even have a body if things didn't coordinate cooperate, but at the same time, it's each one for their own as well. So, mm-hmm. You know, if they could, they would, you know, each one would take over completely. And, you know, that's what happens when cancer comes along. You know, here's a being that has the strength and the motivation to destroy everything around it so that it can continue to survive. And it will do that until the body itself dies, and Because cancer doesn't care. Cancer isn't like, oh, geez, I should let these brain cells, you know, survive. No, cancer's like, I'm just going to, you know, take everything and, you know, so that I can live and grow. And then, you know, eventually it destroys the thing that it's
lives
on the most. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's what we are on this earth.
And the irony, of course, of that is the real host is immune to any kind of decay, dissolution, disintegration, or corruption, because the real host is our true being, a spirit that Ken is talking about here in this paragraph and in this chapter, and that is immune to any kind of disintegration or decomposition or you know, warfare or attack.
Exactly.
Our need for defense, yeah.
Yeah, what is real can't be threatened.
Mm-hmm.
And what is unreal is cancer.
Ain't happened. Tain't necessarily so.
Tain't necessarily so. All right, let's see. Therefore, Ken says, believing the body to be the source of pleasure makes it real, reinforcing the belief in sin and in the end result being that the body will then bring us pain. Remember that sin leads to guilt, and guilt leads to the fear of punishment, which is pain. So again, this is a very important passage. And then Jesus says, from chapter 19, the obstacles to peace, to think that you could be satisfied and happy with so little, and Ken put in little brackets, the body, is to hurt yourself and to limit the happiness that you would have, calls upon pain to fill your meager store and make your life complete. And there lies the motivation for everything in this world, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, using that metaphor, the meager store, I was just kind of picturing a, you know, having this vast pantry and infinite fridge, if you will. And what the ego puts in there is just, you know, moldy, poisoned crumbs, basically, you know, and just like, not gonna satisfy us, you know, using that metaphor. But, Holy Spirit is, we don't even need to eat. There's no sustenance required because there's nothing needs defending or feeding or caring for in truth. How could perfect oneness need anything or be missing anything? You know, well, it's impossible. Well, that's why, of course, miracles suggest that this dream is impossible. But because we've believed it's possible, it meets us where we think we're at and helps us and undo the impossible, you know, gently and patiently by seeing the folly of it and seeing that, you know, we don't have to be miserable. We don't have to make ourselves, you know, insane with fearful dreams. We can learn to see them as false and just see the lies as what they are without condemning them. And then we become disconnected from the lies because they never happen.
They never happen. So yeah. We dream the impossible dream. That's,
exactly.
That's really what we're doing is dreaming
yeah.
the impossible dream. And we think that
imaginary windmills, right?
Well, we think there's honor in it, and we think that there's greatness in it, and we think that people who fall while they're reaching for these goals and everything become our heroes, and you know, because we think that it's noble to you know, dream the impossible dream.
Actually, I'm reminded of, I went to a Course in Miracles conference in near Lake Tahoe early on in my course studies, several decades ago now, and Ellen and Margaret Dolet were there, and several other people that are, you know, you might recognize that, you know. Anyway, but I remember at the time there was a song that was popular that, Did I Ever Tell You You're My Hero? So I while I was at this conference, I made up a little spoof song about the ego, and so my lyrics lampooning the ego were, Did I Ever Tell You You're a Zero, you know. Because that's all the ego is. It's a nothing. It's just it's an empty, silly misunderstanding that we took seriously. And it's just, you know, from the perspective of what we really are, outrageously hilarious. And But we need to be gentle with ourselves and with everyone else, because we do take it seriously, you know. And so many times in the Course, Jesus emphasizes, yeah, you do believe this. Otherwise, you wouldn't need this curriculum.
That's right.
This remedial course, you know. And you need to not only study it, but really, you know, learn it backwards and forwards. Not the letter, but the spirit of it. And to where, you know, as you were pointing out earlier, Lynn, this morning, is, you know, it can't be just a, you know, a now and then hobby. You know, ultimately we have to eat, sleep, and breathe the idea that we are all spirit, and you know, and we have to be able to be patient with ourselves, because we have this enormous resistance, and that resistance takes countless forms until we recognize that resistance is just a silly attempt to want to stay miserable a little longer instead of having a happy outcome to all things. Right?
Yeah, and that's it. You know, it is what we want. Honestly, that is exactly what we want, or else we wouldn't be experiencing it. And so the question that you always have to ask yourself is, why do I want this?
What was I thinking?
Yeah, why do I want this? And do you want to continue reading? Yeah.
Sure. I'm going to reread the quote again from chapter 19. To think you could be satisfied and happy with so little, in brackets the body, is to hurt yourself and to limit the happiness that you would have, calls upon pain to fill your meager store and make your life complete. And Ken comments, so what the ego would have us do is identify with the body. Earlier, the text contrasts the littleness of the ego with the magnitude and glory of our true identity, capital I, which is spirit. And this is from chapter 15, section 3, paragraph 1. Be not content with littleness, but be sure you understand what littleness is and why you could never be content with it. Littleness is the offering you give yourself. You offer this in place of magnitude, and you accept it. Everything in this world is little because it is a world made out of littleness. The empty space between atoms and galaxies, right? Our little Whoville world. And the strange belief that littleness can content you. When you strive for anything in this world in the belief that it will bring you peace, you are belittling yourself and blinding yourself to glory. Littleness and glory are the choices open to your striving and vigilance. You will always choose one at the expense of the other. Then Ken goes on, Jesus is specifically talking about the littleness of the body, and we shall see that the next obstacle discusses how the body is literally the nothingness of the ego. Therefore, when we choose to be satisfied with something that is so little, which is the body, we must hurt ourselves because we are excluding the only source of happiness in the world, which is God. Moreover, the ego teaches that this littleness, this nothingness of the body, will make our lives complete. Yeah, good luck with that. The section in the text on special relationships, the choice for completion, section 5 in chapter 16 of the text, explains the same thing. This is what specialness is all about. I can be complete by taking something from you and drawing it unto myself. This caution is echoed later in the text when Jesus states, this is from chapter 26 in the text, section 7, paragraph 11. Here in the world does the Son of God ask too much. Here in the world does the Son of God ask not too much, but far too little. He would sacrifice his own identity with everything to find a little treasure of his own. And this he cannot do without a sense of isolation, loss, and loneliness. And I believe there's a quote that Marianne Williamson basically probably was inspired by this quote or something else like that. Is, you know, you're afraid of something, I forget what it goes, something like you're afraid of your greatness or something like that. And it has been misquoted as attributed to Nelson Mandela, who probably said something similar, I guess. But again, it's not greatness in the world, it's the greatness of spirit. And I think that's the level of confusion. It's so easy to think that it's like, oh, if I accomplish something in the world, whether it's, you know, my study of the Course, you know, or whatever, it's like, it's not something that we as individuals are doing. It's the choice of our decision makers in our mind to restore our awareness to the idea that we're really all one being. And we do that through forgiving every belief that supports the idea of separation and specialness and the substitutions of the world. Right?
Yeah.
And then Ken completes this thought with, what is truly lacking or is incomplete in us is the love of God, which we banished from our minds when we began our dreams of separation. Settling for anything less than love, than that love, in order to become complete, is simply to belittle ourselves. So, what an important reminder, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I believe that actually Nelson Mandela was quoting Marianne.
Well, I think that might have been.
We are afraid of our own greatness, and I forget right. how it goes too. But we don't think that we're too much, but far too little. So that's huge thing.
Beyond the magnitude of the world, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's the true magnitude of perfect oneness that the Course really never compromises on. And whenever we compromise, it's not like anything, bad is going to happen. It just means, well, we're not there yet. We haven't fully generalized the teaching of the Course to include all of spirit and to see everyone as all of spirit and worthy of that undiminished esteem in our minds.
Well, and that's really what Jesus is, he tells us that this is not going to happen suddenly, that you're going to just suddenly, everything is going to be different, and you're going to have a different point of view. You have to, etch away at your little grievances one at a time, until you can actually generalize it. For me, this is the same grievance I had about this or that. Someone called me yesterday, one of my friends, and they were saying, something happened and, I feel rejected, and how do I get over this feeling of rejection? And I told her, you are rejecting something yourself. You're rejecting them, you're rejecting yourself, you're rejecting, it's your own rejection that you're experiencing. And if you could come to the point where you look at, not look at who's rejecting me, but who am I rejecting, then you'd begin to see that, you're only getting the reflection of your own thoughts, your own thinking. And so, once you stop thinking and being in a mode of rejection, which, that's a pretty much a constant mode for me,
Yeah, and if we're honest with ourselves, that's pretty much the 99.9% norm of what goes on in our world of we think the world is real, we react to it, we have judgments of some sort of condemnation or disappointment or something that is less than peaceful, and we make an assessment and we make it real by saying, oh, this is my identity, and I'm reinforcing my identity moment to moment by those condemnations, of what appears to be in the dream.
Exactly. And so, if you want to stop feeling rejected, stop rejecting. If you want to stop feeling unloved, then start loving. Whatever it is that you want to experience, this is, what they call it, the law of attraction. Basically, this is exactly what it is, although, people who practice it don't see it that way, I'm sure, is that I'm getting what I give. I'm experiencing what I make in this world. Everything that I'm experiencing is a product of my own imagination, my own thoughts, my own ideas. And so if you want to change your experience of the world, change your experience of the world.
Change the teacher that informs you what you're experiencing.
Exactly. Yeah. And when I can do that, and more and more every day, it becomes obvious to me that, whatever I think I see, it is what I have chosen to see in myself, and I've chosen to see in my brother, and going back to that other paragraph we were talking about, chosen to see God. This is how I choose to see God, is as a rejecter. God rejected me.
Yeah. And if it seems like God's far away, guess who moved? Is one of the quotes that somebody shared in our study group says.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Who do you think moved? Who did this to me? Oh, I can only have done it to my own self. And exactly. This is very simple. And all we have to do is just recognize the simplicity of it and that we are doing it to ourselves. And,
exactly.
Stop it.
I was going to comment on you since you mentioned the law of attraction. I dabbled over many years since high school, really, and grade, maybe even before that, and a lot of new age stuff, you know, until I finally got that the course was my spiritual path. So several years ago, before I got back into, right before I found Gary's Renard's first book and really dove headlong back into the course, 2007, a year or two before that, when I'd first moved to Southern Oregon, I was over to friends who now is our neighbors, actually, and we were watching the video on The Secret and all about the law of attraction, which I'd studied in metaphysical circles of various sorts off and on for years and somewhat in depth, but I think that the one thing that I wasn't getting was that, you know, it was that the course, you know, light bulb moment illuminated was that the only real fulfillment we're ever going to have is as spirit, and we can do all kinds of things in the world, and some appear to be having all kinds of great results in the world, and others seem to be always beset with troubles of one sort or another. And yet, ultimately, it makes no difference. Just as the Course says, it doesn't matter whether you're what appears to be a healthy body or an unhealthy body. If the world, if the universe is a dream, if there is no world, and this is the central thought the Course attempts to teach, world being separate stuff, then including the bodies and personas that we think we are, then the law of attraction becomes, in the ego's hands, the law of distraction, because it basically says, oh, well, let's go for fixing the dream rather than taking our dream repair technician hat off recovering dream repair technician, you know, and getting out the felt marker and putting that over the top of our dream repair technician hat, all right? So, because if we recognize that if we're trying to repair the dream, if we're trying to make the stuff in space-time work for us and think that that's the cause, we've got the law of cause and effect backwards. We're using the result incorrectly and in a way that's never going to make us happy. And the Course tells us at every turn, you know, that what we're really experiencing is really just the mechanism of a decision we've already made in our mind for one teacher or the other, and there's just those two teachers, the Holy Spirit and the ego, and that inner kindness teacher, aka Holy Spirit, always is going to remind us that we don't need anything. And in fact, in the Song of Prayer pamphlet, my favorite, you know, Cliff Notes abbreviation is, the secret of true prayer is to forget the things you think you need. And if we can just kind of let go of our white knuckle grip on all that stuff in the world and just, you know, do what we think we need to do, but just watch it without condemnation. Just kind of, you know, as we go through our days, just say, oh yeah, there's this Bruce character thinking that he needs to do all this stuff and, you know, rebuild his computer and go to the doctor and, you know, call his family and see how they're doing and attend to stuff around the house and, you know, empty the litter box and do the dishes and laundry and plant the plants in the yard, the whole gamut of stuff. It doesn't mean we stop doing those things. It just means that we don't take them quite as seriously, and the outcomes of those things are no longer the things upon which our happiness is contingent. And I think that's the key to real happiness is recognizing that our peace of mind is really truly independent of what does or doesn't happen in a world of dreams that we made up.
Exactly. And that is true freedom. You know, that is what brings about an actual ability to be joyful in a world where things seem to be so terrible. You know, we can have peace in a world where everything seems to be going to crap because we just see the truth and reality of what is and not the story that we made up. And thank you so much, Bruce.
Likewise. Hey, do we have time for one quick addendum to our earlier announcements?
Yes, please.
Okay. I did, while you were talking just now, I looked up the dates of Doug Sparks' next workshop in Ajijic, Mexico, near Lake Chapala in the state of Guadalajara. And it's going to be in the same hotel that his last one was, and it'll be on his website, which is DougSparksACIM.com. And that's going to be January 27th through the 30th of 2020. Already into the 2020s coming up. So anyway, highly recommended, and check out Doug's website because he's got lots of great content there. And we're going to be doing more video stuff. I'll be helping him with that a little bit. And just I can't say enough good things about Doug as a Ken Wapnick inspired course teacher with many decades. So anyway, that's January 27th through the 30th, 2020, in Ajijic, Mexico, where Doug Sparks is doing another workshop there. And highly recommended. So anyway, have a great week. Love everyone, and. May we all be gentle with ourselves.
That's right. Thank you so much, Bruce Rawls. I love you with all my heart. So
likewise.
Grateful that you've chosen to be my mighty companion. And for how many years, I mean, I met you first on the Disappearance of the Universe group. That's where I first saw you. And, you know, just the things that came to bring us together in the years. I mean, you moved to Colorado, and I got to go to your house. And, you know, it just... So many, wonderful opportunities. You spoke at the Miracles in the Mountains. Was it Miracles in the Mountains or whatever it was called?
The one in Estes Park.
The one in Estes Park Weekend of Freedom.
Weekend of Freedom one.
Yeah, and, every interaction I have with you is such a joy. And I'm so grateful for your presence in my life.
Likewise, likewise so much. And I want to acknowledge all the wonderful work you do with, but every day, I mean, just over and over again, just a lot of dedication there, so.
Yep, we are companions. We are soldiers in God's army. That's what we are.
And there's nothing to fight. That's the best part.
That's it.
Thanks so much, Lynn. Have a great week, all.
I love you, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
Wow. Definitely some well-informed contingents, my friends. Wow, I listen to you guys and it's just like PhDs everywhere. It's wonderful. Good morning, everyone. I guess that can be heard. Yeah, hi. Yeah. It's funny, I was looking through a knothole in the fence and I can see myself looking back at me, you know, and just the abstract opening of God's heart is... It's just amazing. Such a wonderful way of thinking. And the natural state kind of just talked to me, to you. Anyone? Oh, good.